the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I'm really excited to have Larry Sharp here. He is the Libertarian candidate for the governor of New York in the upcoming election, and he was just on the Joe Rogan podcast. So thanks so much for being here, Larry.
I'm doing great. Too bad I did not smoke marijuana.
I know.
Like Elon Musk did, I'd get like 4 million views too.
Yeah, you would have been on the front page of Yahoo News.
I would have been on the front page, absolutely. So, well, yes.
Yeah, it was a hard, you know, at least it wasn't the act you had to follow. So,
I guess that's true. Yes, I didn't have to follow him at least. So there's some advantage. I love that, yes.
Yeah, you got to think of the
But again, part. I'm not a panderer, so I wouldn't have done it anyway, even if I knew.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that was very clear by the way you... The way you participate in Joe Rogan's show, you didn't try to be his best friend. You didn't try to, you know, you were always consistent and you were always trying to state your views. And I think a lot of people appreciate that.
I hope so. I'm not sure Joe did, but I hope everyone else did.
Yeah. No, I think sometimes Joe has little hiccups with some issues. And I've listened to probably 500 of his episodes. So yeah. You start to get in people's head at that point. But, you know, since then, I think I've seen a lot of positive reception. Have you noticed a lot of positive reception? Have things been growing? Because I know one big impediment is just getting your name out there. Like you've said, you know, if you can just get the name recognition, you've proven you can move those people into your camp. And so has that helped with things like Twitter verification? People were talking about that, saying your opponents had been verified.
Absolutely. It happens all the time. Look, the advantage and the issue that people often don't realize, and this is running for any office, but particularly if you're in a third party, also particularly if you're a libertarian, is that we very often push the idea of my ideals, that's what matters. My policy, that's what matters. People will flock to me because of my ideals or my policy. But that's not true. People have to know who you are. Popularity does matter. Popularity isn't the reason why people vote for you often, but it is the reason why they know who you are to do the homework to decide if they're going to vote for you. If they don't know anybody, they do one of two things. They stay home, or they vote for the name they know. If they care, they can't do any research on you if they don't know who you are. So you're totally right. Joe Rogan helped completely. I'm very happy I was on. I was on Dave Rubin. That was good. I was on Jason Stapleton. That was good. I'm on your podcast show. I'm sure that will be good. Every single time I get my name out, there are some people who go, Larry Sharp, let me check him out. And if they're in New York State and they can vote, I'm in business.
Yeah, and I heard you on Mance Rader's show, I believe, or it might have been Ruben. But I loved you on every show you've been on. You've been very consistent. And so when you talk about some of your primary opponents, you know, so you're going against, for people who don't know, Cuomo primarily, and you have Nixon in the field as well.
We actually won't have Nixon in the field. The primary here in New York State for the Democratic Party, and the primary is really only for the Democratic Party. There are several parties in New York State. Most of them are simply puppets of the major two, right? Of the Democrat Republican Party. Most are just puppets. But a couple aren't. The Democrats will have a primary coming up here this Thursday. At that point, Nixon will lose. And when she loses, it'll be Cuomo. So she will not be in the field as of next week.
I guess, would you say it was probably good for her to be in the race, though, to expose a lot of the stuff that Cuomo probably... one of his later opponents might have had to do the work to start exposing.
Absolutely. I wish it was my idea to put Nixon in. I wish I could take credit for it. It was amazing, but to be forward with you was lucky. In fact, the funniest part is when I first started this campaign about a year ago, I wasn't sure if I could win. I knew that I could make impact. There was no doubt I could make impact. I was actually very comfortable and confident I could even break 10%. I thought I could. There was no doubt in my mind back then. But once Nixon got involved, and once the other people started getting involved, then I realized something. This is going to be a five-way race. And in a five-way race where other people are breaking up the incumbent, which is the best part, Howie Hawkins is green, Stephanie Miner is independent but a former Democrat, Nixon's a Democrat, there's three or four people breaking up the Democratic vote here in New York State, and it's a five-way race, and New York is a plurality state, meaning I only need 30% or so to win. I don't need 51%. This became a winnable race. And it's insane that I didn't think that was true, really, last July. Now I know it is. This is a winnable race. If I get my name out, I win. How do I know that? With people who know who I am, I already poll at 25%. And that's not people telling their friends or me moving forward or me even rising in my ability to communicate on the people who get to know me. So when I get a higher percentage of people who know me, I got a shot at winning this thing.
So how do you think you've differentiated yourself from some of the other libertarian candidates that have run and petered out pretty early, not really stood much of a chance?
Yeah, several things. The first one is I'm not afraid to raise money. That's the number one thing. I'm not afraid to raise money. Most people will collapse in a campaign because they run out of money. I'm not afraid to run out of money. That's the number one thing. I'm not going to run out of money because I literally am out there trying to raise money every day. I'm always raising money. By the way, LarrySharp.com, that's Sharp with an E, and the E stands for electable. See, yet again, trying to raise money. Yeah. So yes, I'm always trying to raise money. And that's what matters. Now, don't get me wrong. I've raised nowhere near the amount of money as the big guys have, but I don't require that because I can run a much thinner, leaner campaign because my volunteers are excited and want to work because I actually have policy. That's the second thing. I actually have policy. Most libertarians actually don't. They have principle. And principle's good. Don't get me wrong. I have principles too, as you've heard. I like principles. But if you don't have actual policies, the principles don't matter. People don't vote for you because you have principles. They may join the party because of it. Some of them will. But you're not going to win an election because of it. You're going to win an election because of policy. And I say it all the time to people who are libertarians. This is any third party, but specifically libertarians in this case. They ask me things like, Larry, should I talk about liberty or the party? And I say, neither. Give people libertarian answers for their problems and they'll turn. And if you've heard me talk, that's all I ever do. Yeah. I give people actual solutions for their problems that are libertarian and principally based, and people come to me. So that's the second piece. There's the third piece, though. I started early. I started running this campaign last year, July, so that I could make all my mistakes, have all my problems early on in the campaign. I could learn my mistakes, put my team together, do all those things early. That's why I started early. In addition, I didn't just look locally. Half of my team's not even in my state. That's also on purpose because I need talent. And any third party, including libertarians, will always have a lack of talent because people want to go, the most talented people want to go to the big parties. So you're going to have a very light bench, which means you need to go to other areas.
Yeah, but at the same time, I would say it is almost like you're running it like a startup company. So you've got, you know, these small, lean teams, but you're organized, you're efficient, you know, you're light on your feet, which is an advantage in of itself. And, you know, interestingly enough, I would maybe push back on the talent part, and just in the sense that a lot of people willing to go against the grain can tend to be the most talented people who are willing to work harder and approach things differently. And that's one thing I've noticed within some crypto companies is you do have this weird intersection of very libertarian leaning people who wouldn't really belong at a Google or you know YouTube, Facebook, wherever, that end up in these companies, and they really do want to decentralize things, use technology to make things better. And it seems like that's sort of what your company is, or what your company, if your campaign was a company, would be trying to do.
Yeah, except here's the difference. My company, if you call it my company, has a history of eating its own and a history of failure. We have 40 years of failure in eating our own. Yeah. If you had that in crypto, you'd be collapsing.
Yeah.
You don't have that. I do. So I have to get over that. One of my biggest problems I deal with is donors who say things to me like, Larry, I've given up on the party. Or, Larry, so many of you people in the Libertarian Party have disappointed me. I don't pay attention anymore. So in theory, you are correct. But in practice, we have that 40 years of culture you don't have.
Yeah. Well, I guess, so here's, I guess, the newest development might be, it doesn't even have to be just a sense of, I guess, this is my belief. It can be moved more towards the financial incentives that the established parties use to raise money, in so much as the libertarian philosophy as it relates to crypto and as crypto relates to finance can be very profitable for the people waiting on licenses in New York, waiting on some of these regulations to decrease, with people with billions of dollars wrapped up in this industry that are waiting on, you know, essentially one state to move things along for our entire country.
If seems the like crypto there's an opportunity. Community would get off of its ass, and if it's listening, please listen now.
Yeah.
And be very clear. If I win in New York State, or even come in second, it will make everything better for the crypto world, for the Bitcoin world, for the blockchain world, for any of those things. It will absolutely help them, because I'm the only guy talking about it, and I'm not afraid to talk about it, and I talk about it with authority, like I actually care, because I care. The reality of it is New York State is the poster child for what's wrong. New York State goes out of its way to push out anything new. We pushed out cryptocurrency. We don't even look at open source at all. We pushed out hemp and cannabis. We're going out of the way to push out the vaping industry. Anything that's new or interesting, we're beating up Uber. We're trying to beat up Airbnb. If it's new, New York State says hit it with a stick.
Yeah.
If I could actually change that, it will help every state.
And, you know, going to school in Austin, the Austin City Council said, Uber, Lyft, you're out of here if you don't fingerprint every single driver. And they said, you know what, we're picking up our bags and we're leaving. Screw you guys. And that's exactly what happened. And
yes.
All of a sudden, the economy of that city, when I first got there, it was bustling. Every big tech company was moving in new offices. Apple's putting in a headquarters. And by the time I left, they were running for the hills because they did not trust that crazy liberal government, essentially, to safeguard their business interests.
Absolutely.
And with New York, I mean, a lot of people don't know this. For exchanges, you need something called a BIT license. And so far, 10 companies have this license. Actually, two got approved today, a couple of hours ago. But they say it'll take them another 10 years to get through the rest of the 9, I think, applicants. So we're talking about they're essentially getting, I'm sure, paid off by the lobbyists for Coinbase and Ripple and whoever else, Gemini, Paxos. These guys are making literally $15 to $100 million a day in some instances, just off transaction fees, because they have a monopoly in these spaces.
New York State loves government monopolies. Yeah. Oh my God, do we love that? It's amazing. And the best part is the guy who made up the BIT license was literally a crony of our current governor. He came in. It was the Department of Financial Services in New York State decided to regulate it. A guy named Benjamin Losky made up the BIT license, then left and became a consultant for BIT licensing.
Oh, I'm sure he got paid.
How amazing. The one thing about New York State corruption, man, are we good at it. Like, if you want to look at what corruption should look like, just come to my state. Just look around. We are the best at it.
The shining city on the hill.
We are. We are the city in the swamp. That is exactly who we are. The city in the swamp. We are very good at that. Government monopolies, cronyism, putting your friend on a board. He then sets himself up so that he can make millions later and donate to your campaign. Ah, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and I mean, for example, you can do the same thing in Wyoming and pay a $100 fee, get it, you know, a couple weeks later. So that's what it needs to be versus what it is.
Yes.
And how different, you know, just the regulations in place can be. So, I mean, what are some general things and more specific policy measures that you can do to make New York more attractive for entrepreneurs and financial firms? Because you would think with so much finance in New York, it would be a more attractive place for financial companies, but I guess the embedded
old
one.
Old money.
Yeah.
Old money, my friend. Remember, as I said, anything new, hit it with a stick.
Yeah.
We like old money. If you're like a JP Morgan Chase, oh, we love you. If you're not that, whatever. We don't care. So let me give you, for both small business that's local and also small business that's not local, what I mean by that. If you're just like a regular small business in New York, like you are a bike shop or something like that, right? Or a coffee house. Something local. I want to create a law that's very similar to the one in Wyoming right now, which is if you are a farmer in Wyoming and you agree to sell only within Wyoming, you actually are immune from other federal regulatory bodies. I want to copy that for all small farms and all small businesses. So that if you're just a small business, you're like, again, a coffee shop, something like that, where you're not really going to do any delivering over state lines, you're not going to really be an internet business, then that will help you out for that right away. Now, that's just for specifically for someone who's very local like that. For all businesses in general, I want to streamline our tax system in general. Streamline to the point where you could do all your taxes on one page. If you do it like that, what winds up happening is, by default, bigger companies will wind up paying more because there'll be less loopholes. Smaller companies will wind up paying less, not because they'll pay less in taxes, but they won't get hit with fees and fines for missing some detail that they, you know, missed, or have to pay some accountant to do all their taxes. So they'll wind up paying less because of that. No fines and or fees, and won't pay as much for accountants. So we do that, and that will also begin to help them. Next, this is for any business, again, in New York State, regardless, small businesses. This is dealing with our workers' comp. Workers' comp in New York State, is one of the only states where we actually have our own insurance board, which is a disaster. It just makes things harder, just makes things more expensive, and just makes it easier for people to sue small businesses. In addition to that, in New York State, we have a situation where you have to pay workers' comp for work-related accidents and non-work-related accidents, and that's a law. That's embarrassingly bad.
That's insane, yeah.
Of course you should pay for a work-related injury. Of course you should. But a non-work, that should be an optional benefit that a company should choose to give or not if they think it will help to get... Yeah, well, that may get you more talent. And if you think that's better to get you talent, you should do that if you think it's right for your business. I shouldn't decide that as governor. You should as a business owner if you think that works for you. So that's the next thing, but I'm still not done. The next thing I want to work on, particularly when this is specific when it comes to the blockchain world, Bitcoin, blockchain, any of those situations, any cryptocurrency. I want to make it to, it's a very simple way of dealing with paying your bills and who you are and what you are in my state. I'd like to make just three separate issues. You pick that you want to be one of three things. You want to be a retailer, meaning you want to be someone who takes some form of cryptocurrency, right? Whatever that is.
Yeah.
All right. So if you do that, all good. Here's what you do. You're going to take whatever amount of cryptocurrency you brought in at the end of any given month. You're going to take it and match it to the average of what that cryptocurrency was on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange over the course of that last month, what the average was. You're going to then convert that into dollars, and you're going to pay your income tax. I'm sorry, you're going to pay your sales tax. That's it. Done deal. If that cryptocurrency you took is not on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, then you are going to have to convert it to that. But as long as it's on that exchange, that's what New York State is going to accept as true and real. Whatever their average is over the course of last month, whatever that is, take it, write your percentage, write your sales tax, you're done. That's it.
Yeah, very simple. And the ironic thing about blockchain that I think people don't realize is it's the perfect accounting mechanism. Literally, yes. Every transaction is there for you. It the amount of labor, useless labor that it eliminates on the part, you know, on the part of regulators and accountants, and you know, it's unnecessary. Everyone can pay less and automate the entire process with a few miners in some warehouse somewhere.
Now, to be clear, that is not the perfect answer. I know that. And some crypto people get mad at me because they can think of some better way. Awesome. I want to make it simple so that people get started, so that people start doing it, and then we can fix it and tweak it. That is not perfect, I know. But it's, everyone understands it. People get what the exchange is. People can pick what they want to take. It makes it easy enough for the average person to jump in and to be a retailer. And that's why I want to start that way. And when I tell people that, they're like, wow, that actually makes sense. You know what? If that's really for sales tax, I would take Bitcoin. I know. It's simple. Yeah. That's my point. If we make it easy, you'll take it.
Yeah.
Done. Now, you might say, but Larry, then 1 month it's high, 1 month it's low. Yes, that's how cryptocurrency works. But if more people start using it regularly, some of these things will become currencies. They'll wind up becoming currencies. That's fine. I don't mind. Right now, who the hell knows what it is? And I'm fine with that. And when people ask me, Larry, what is it like? You know, we should regulate this thing. It's scary. Well, before I go to the next two types, let me touch the retail market because I think that's the most important one.
Mm-hmm.
If we get the retail market to work, that means it becomes mainstream and people won't be afraid of it. If people aren't afraid of it, all the bit licenses and stuff go away. The reason why we have this is because people are afraid of it. And there's several reasons why. The first one is the name. Cryptocurrency sounds scary. It does. And people in the field go, no, it doesn't. Yeah, it does. Crypto, like the Crypt Keeper. Yeah. It sounds scary. And if you don't know what it is, then you get scared of it.
Yeah.
Not just that. Since people don't know about it, talk about things like, well, it's terrorists and it's, you know, slavery. And so people start getting afraid. That's what it's used for, the dark web and all that kind of stuff. So it's scary. So how do I make it not so scary? Number one, make it simple, as I talked about with the retailing issue. But something else, when people ask me about it, I say, well, you know what? It's just like comic books. And they say, what? Oh, baseball cards. I said, what? And I tell them, look, when I was a kid, I loved baseball cards and comic books. I still like comic books a little bit, but not baseball cards anymore. But I really loved baseball cards and comic books. And I would trade them. And if I wanted to trade my Iron Man for your two Hulks, and we both agreed that that was the value of it, then we did it. Because you really wanted my Iron Man and I wanted your two Hulks. So we're good. And that's how it worked. And they would go, yeah, we did that. Great. I would say, all right, great. So where was the government involved in that? And they go, what? Where's government involved? When you traded your Beanie Babies or your baseball cards, where was the government? Well, no. When did the government come into play? And I said, well, it didn't. Well, it did. If you sold your entire, you know, collection, then it might, because that would be considered income if you sold your entire collection.
Mm-hmm.
They'd go, oh, yeah, maybe then. Yeah, but if you were a kid, not even that, because the government didn't pay attention to you at all. I said, cryptocurrency is just like baseball cards. It's just like comic books. People decide what the value is, sometimes even compared to other comic books or other baseball cards or dollars. They decide, they agree, they make a change. Why should that be illegal? And the crypto people get mad at me and they go, that's not exactly true. You're right. It's not exactly true, but it's close enough and it makes people feel good about it because they remember, oh, baseball cards or Beanie Babies. It sounds good and cool and nice and it's not scary. So I use that as a very good analogy just to get people not so afraid. And they see the logic that government doesn't have to be involved and you can still make a trade and the world's not going to end. So I use that. Now I bring that up because the second way that you can be besides a retailer is you can be a trader. If you choose to be a trader, very simple. As long as you are purchasing and swapping in cryptocurrencies, you pay no tax. Just like when you trade baseball cards or trade
or Beanie rewards Babies points or even, whatever. You know? Yeah.
You just rewards points. I love that. You just trade them.
You use
them.
The word points and it doesn't matter anymore.
Absolutely. Trade them any way you like. Now, some people say, but Larry, you're saying no transaction fees? I'm not saying that. You might, look, if you sold your baseball cards online, the people swapping the card might take a fee. I'm okay with that. Pay the fee that you want to pay. But the more you open this up, the more options you'll have, which means you will absolutely have low fee options. And if you like a low fee option, take it. If you'd rather have a high fee option that has some other service that you want, take the high fee option. Let the consumer decide what they want to use, just as you would with baseball cards. You might have to pay shipping and a handling fee, or you can take your baseball card down to the guy's house and give it to him. You pick. I'm totally fine either way. If you want to be a trader, you only pay once you trade in. Once you trade in, awesome. All you pay is the normal fees you would pay when it comes to capital gains. That's all you pay. Otherwise, you don't pay. Very simple. This is another way you could do it. Now, the third thing you could be is a bank. You want to be a bank. No worries. All you do is you decide to do whatever a bank would do. I have no problem doing it. It's contractual. You agree to give X of this coin in return for Y. Fine, it's contractual. All good. Only one thing. No fractional banking. And the reason why I like that so much is we could actually wind up having crypto banks that don't require fractional banking, which will show the for us libertarians how unnecessary the Fed is.
Yeah, it seems like you don't even really need crypto banks in theory. You would only need them, I guess, from the regulation standpoint,
Yes, so, but look, people are not going to feel safe if you don't call it something.
You need, you need a
boss. And I keep saying the safe thing, right? Yeah. And I know people who are very logical, and the programs go, "That's dumb." It may be dumb, but it's human.
Yep. Oh no.
So we gotta call it something. So let's call it a bank, call it a retailer, and call it a trader. That'll make people feel good. Aha! I feel good. I can grasp what this is, and then let the crypto world do its thing. So you gotta put my name tag on. Don't get mad. It's a name tag. Just keep going, do your business.
And so one thing I really like about crypto markets that's opened up for a lot of people is like amateur investing. So, you know, I'm younger, I'm only 23, but all of my friends are trading crypto all the time. Yep. It's exciting for them. In China, you have a lot of young people trading stocks now, now more than ever. They're doing it on, you know, their phone. They have all sorts of applications. And you're seeing actually a lot of upward mobility as a result to the increased accessibility to capital markets. And so one great thing about ICOs is all of a sudden you have this entire investor class that previously didn't have access to the investments that accredited investors and VCs and angels had access to. And now they sort of can get in on the ground floor, but there's this sort of paternal pushback saying you aren't smart enough to risk your money, you can't afford it, we don't want to let you do that. There's certain and so that seems to be the pushback.
The problem is it is what I love about this, and I deal with this also, I'm totally with you. What I get all the time is, "It's safety, Larry. These people, they don't know anything. They're going to lose all their money." And I go, "You mean like the crash 2008? Like that?" "Like that crash? You mean like that crash?" So what you're actually saying is the only people who get to have an in, the only people who get to play at the highest level, the only people who make sure their books aren't burned are those who are wealthy in the know. Yep. So the elite get to do it, but the average person can't. It's not about safety. It's about people controlling their monopoly. People controlling their oligarchy. That's what it's about.
Yeah.
So 2008 will still crash anyway. So why can't someone make money outside of that? In fact, if we actually had the junior people being able to invest in cryptocurrency, there'd be less damage when the next big crash comes, because a chunk of our economy won't be in that.
Yeah, and not to mention, I mean, one of the reasons we started our company really in the first place was just because of how much shady stuff was going on in the background. We had a lot of funds. You had Jamie Dimon say one thing, and then, you know, Chase Bank, JP Morgan go on a Swedish exchange the next day and buy up, you know, $10 million short it. Or buy some up at the bottom. You know, they're playing these games in an unregulated market the same way they would play them in a regulated market, except they have all the tools to play with and all of the media exposure, so they'll push a Bitcoin Cash article, the price will shoot, they'll do a pump and dump. But this was being done at really high senior levels because it was legal at the time, and so they were essentially screwing all the people who just didn't have the information.
Correct.
Yeah, but of course the people who get penalized are the people losing money, not the people making them lose money.
Every single time. Exactly correct. Look, they're trying to control their oligarchy, I get that, and when I tell people that, they go, "Oh yeah, you're right."
Yeah.
But there is one thing that we have to work on, though, and that is the ICO rules.
So what would your rules be?
To be forward with you, this is one thing I haven't really dug into. But we do have to standardize ICO rules. That's one thing I wanted to do. And the way we would punish is if you don't follow them, you don't get an official stamp.
Yeah.
That's it. If you want to do it without following ICO rules, you can, but there's no stamp. And if you lie and you put a stamp on it, that's a crime. That's fraud. You go to jail for that. So you have two ways. You can accept the standardized rules and put a stamp on it, and then that's fine. Or you cannot, and if you lie, that's fraud, that's a crime.
And I guess to some extent that is what's happening, because there are a lot of companies going international. I've had, you know, we had people trying to get us to move over to Switzerland. They've got Crypto Valley there. And so internationally, since the rules are a lot more lax, it's a lot easier, and a lot of these companies are starting. So just look,
get your guys to write me some checks for my campaign.
Yeah.
Get your New York people to vote for me, and you can stay in New York.
Yeah.
All good.
Well, that's ideal for sure. And that's, yes, you know, absolutely. That's the thing. That's the scary thing too, is it's like, who's investing heavily in blockchain right now? Well, Russia, the people who you supposedly are so worried about having elections that are less susceptible to hacks than ours. They're clearly doing something that they think is going to prevent us from doing it in retaliation.
And that's correct.
We're,
yes,
we're not paying any attention, and we're not trying to.
And the worst part is, now that talent goes away from New York, it goes out of America in many cases. That's the sad part.
Yeah.
It goes out of America, so that not only are we losing the talent that could create a better system, we're also losing the talent that could defend against an attack.
Yeah.
We're losing both.
Yeah.
And look. I'm sure there are many people who love America and they're Americans, but they also love their money and they also love success and they also love moving forward in something they love. And if the Russians or the Chinese or the insert company here wants to offer them this, they're going to go. I get it. It's how it works.
Yeah. And a lot of them going to Puerto Rico, for example. So that's a good example of how just the right incentive programs can create, you know, massive change in places that really need it. If you're just smart about incentivizing people, and that's what I love about your campaign, is it's all about incentives, transparency, and it's pretty simple, but very rarely applied.
Well, it's because this is the biggest issue, and people don't realize this. You know, this campaign is actually two things I'll bring up. The first thing is actually about establishment versus non-establishment. Right now, non-establishment very often wins. And in my specific case in New York State, for those New Yorkers who are listening, you know that the people in the top old parties who are running are both career politicians, literally have only had government jobs since they were 18 years old. Yeah. That's
it. Wasn't he the youngest mayor of...
Youngest mayor ever.
Yeah.
Yes, mayor at 19. Literally. Yeah. And the other guy, his father was governor. I mean, this, you can't get any more establishment than this. So they can't even imagine doing this. Their answer is always legislation, law, legislation, law. It's never about incentivizing culture, change, never. It's never about the carrot. It's always about the stick. They can't even imagine. The stuff I'm telling you, I say out loud all the time. They hear all the time. They could just take my ideas. No, they can't. It's like asking a cat to bark. Yeah. It's like asking a dog to meow. They just can't do it. It's impossible. So that's the first step. But the second thing is, and a lot of people don't understand this, my campaign is actually the most influential in the entire nation this year. Just imagine if a third party in New York, ranked, by the way, by Cato, the least free state in the union, also ranked, I think, by AARP as the worst place to retire in the union, if all of a sudden a libertarian even just came in second. But imagine if I won. It would change the entire nation overnight. If you had a governor actively talking about cryptocurrency, blockchain, open source, on a daily, weekly basis, it would bring everyone out of the woodwork out and go, you know, I've been thinking about this forever, but no one will support me. Oh, yeah. My God. They would flock and they'd be throughout all the states. It would begin to change everything. It will change everything overnight. You will watch a massive flood of this happening. This is really important.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it seems like it's primed to happen. I mean, do you think we're at the time where people are finally fed up with the establishment candidates? They're looking for real solutions, because
Donald Trump is our president.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as you get in there,
we're fed up with the establishment. Yes, we are.
Yeah. And so as soon as you can get in there and just prove these things, especially in a more libertarian direction, because I guess that's the problem with the Trump presidency in some ways, is he's just a wrecking ball. He's moving things around, and I think that's necessary. But you are going to need at some point to replace all these things with something better, something more efficient, and prove that that's the way to do it instead of just adding layers, which everyone always wants to do.
To be forward, I'm not sure I even have to prove anything except that someone talking about this is a chance at victory. Because all people actually need is hope.
Yeah.
They need some hope. Right now, it's hopeless, so they leave. If I actually show them, look, I'm talking about it, and I didn't get laughed out of the room. I'm talking about it, and people are listening. Others will follow behind me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm ready to follow behind you, run for Congress up here in California.
Absolutely, exactly correct. This is exactly what I'm talking about. We can do this. It can be done. This is the year we can make impact. And the reason why I push it so much is, if we don't do this, we are absolutely going to go down, and down a road where we can almost never get back without having to reboot the entire nation.
Yeah.
I can't stand that.
Yeah, no, it's really scary. Everyone's got their blinders on, heading for a tunnel that they don't know how to get out of. And it seems like in California, growing up in California, it's a very similar case probably to New York, where it's just every time you hear about something getting passed, it's just more and more regulation, less and less money. Our schools are constantly, the class sizes are getting bigger. And so I guess maybe if we turned into some of the more specific policy ideas that you have. I know you've talked a lot about education, figuring out ways to reduce, you know, federal government's expenditure in places like education. I know you talked a little bit about like concealed carry on campuses on Rogan. And going to UT, I was there when they passed that law that allowed concealed carry in college campuses. And there was huge pushback, but after that, no problems. I mean, you don't hear about, every professor that I had was out in the middle of campus screaming and yelling with hundreds of kids about how this was going to be the end. And, you know, lo and behold, nothing's happened and there have been no school shootings. There was a stabbing, but there wasn't a shooting, so.
I completely agree. And my issue here I bring up all the time is, if you hear me talk, I will constantly say things like, I'm not trying to attack the branch of a problem. I'm trying to attack a root.
Yeah.
Right? The root cause. And when it's about school shootings, the root cause is unhappy kids and public suicides. If we deal with it at that level, the rest will begin to get better.
Yeah.
So that's why I talk about the idea of it being the school's a soft target, right? And when someone does a mass shooting, almost always, it is a mass suicide. It's actually a public suicide. The person's unhappy. If the things that's killing our kids, as I mentioned on Joe Rogan, is three things: lack of purpose, lack of community, and loneliness. If we're able to deal with those issues, and my education piece also deals with those issues, if we deal with those issues, you'll find a whole lot less kids who are unhappy and without purpose.
Yeah.
But when there are people who are, they're looking to make a splash. And it sounds horrible, but they are. They're looking to say, I'm going to show the world as I go out and die. That's what they're looking for. So they look for a soft target. Other thing you find in all these school shootings, and almost all the shootings, is they're planned. They're literally planned out. I will do X, then Y. The one guy, I remember, he pulled the fire alarm, waiting for the kids to get into the hallway before he shot. They often have pipe bombs or pressure cooker bombs prepared in case things fail. They plan them. The idea that they won't know who is armed and who isn't armed means they cannot plan, which means that school is no longer a soft target. Does it mean that there won't be mass shootings? It does not, but it means they won't be at schools.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
It was also,
so we still have to fix the root problem of the unhappy kids. But in the meantime, let's just pass this so that they won't be shooting schools anymore.
Yeah, and I would just say a lot of people thought these licenses were easy to get, and you know, I went through
the process. They are
not. It's not easy. So anyone who is willing to go through that just because they want to protect themselves or someone else is probably someone you want to have around, just generally speaking. Well,
but not just that, right? That's true, but not just, if you look at the people who've committed crimes, right, who do violent crimes, look at those, you know, who are licensed gun owners versus aren't. Licensed gun owners are some of the most law-abiding citizens we have. And that's every state. Doesn't matter what state you're in. If you're a licensed gun owner, the odds are you're more law-abiding than someone who isn't.
Yep.
So you probably have a better chance of someone committing a crime who isn't a licensed gun owner. So, a violent crime. So yes, way, totally different. So that's step one. But two, you're not forcing anyone. Just because you have a license, maybe you personally don't want to bring your firearm to school. Don't. It's not required. It's if you want to. The goal is the person doesn't know, therefore you won't have to use it anyway.
Yeah.
And it is the threat that we won't know who is carrying that matters.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty logical, I think. And so I guess to move on to the unhappy kids, you know, that's I think one that really a lot of people haven't had an easy time with. I guess growing up more recently, I think I have had somewhat more exposure to some of that stuff and seeing a lot of kids who are very isolated. You've got big class sizes, you've got a lot of kids on, you know, tons of pharmaceuticals. Everyone I knew was on Adderall. They were, I mean, I went to, so I broke my hip.
I know kids who snort Adderall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yes. I broke my hip when I was a junior in high school, and they had me on painkillers for 3-4 years. And they just kept trying to give me, like, Xanax, anything. You know, you walk in, and every time you complain about anything, they try to write you a prescription.
Absolutely.
And that stuff can really mess you up. And I could definitely see how a lot of kids, when you're just getting told by a doctor, you know, take this and do this and you'll be fine. And these doctors, you know, they're getting reimbursed by Medicare.
Absolutely.
You know, $100 every time I walk in for 5 minutes to pick up my prescription. And they'll actually, I've had them do the calculations in front of me where they'll say, okay, you know, I'll write you 3 prescriptions because you're paying $150, literally drug dealing.
Yes.
And it's, you know, to the point where you have alternatives. I finally got off of it. I started using medical marijuana here, actually. And that actually helped me.
You're in California, you can do that.
Yeah, I won't be able to in a couple weeks, unfortunately. But that helped me a lot. And things like, you know, you'll see hemp plastic. There are a lot of these alternatives that seem to fix more than one problem by the legalization. So I know you've talked about legalizing marijuana.
I've actually said we want to regulate it like onions.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's what I said. Because when people hear legalize marijuana, the first thing they think of is, oh my God, we're going to tax it so we can fix the potholes or something like that. I'm like, no, it's the second we do that, we are going to ensure that big business wins and small business loses. The more regulation, the more taxes, the more big business wins, small farmers lose, small business loses, and even worse, we're going to have a situation with where a black market still exists.
Yeah, and that's exactly
what's
happening.
I don't want a black market to still exist.
Yeah, I mean, I hear the prices, since it's been legalized, the prices have doubled with the taxes. Once you actually, it's a 40% actual state, local, et cetera tax. And you still have a few operators who are, you know, doing it under the radar and selling, you know, you're getting way, way more for your money, and the quality is actually better, surprisingly.
Yes.
And it's just a weird sort of...
Well, I put hemp and cannabis together.
Yeah.
And I say regular like onions for several reasons. As you said, many of the things I talk about will have many benefits, right? They solve many problems, or at least mitigate many problems. Mm-hmm. The first one is farmers. Farmers in New York State are struggling. Small farmers are. Big farmers doing okay. Small farmers are struggling desperately here in New York State. You give them an opportunity to now specialize in hemp and or cannabis products. Now we're rocking and rolling.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And remember I talked earlier about the idea of the Wyoming law of making it, if you decide to sell only locally, not being required to be under any jurisdiction of federal regulatory bodies. You do that, now they can actually do something else. They can begin to sell locally, which is awesome. But more importantly, treat them like businesses to where now they can create small factories or manufacturing centers on their farms, and they can now make specialized products, right? Yeah. They can now make like, and you see it happening in New York all the time with beer, breweries or mm-hmm. coffee shops. Now you can have specialized hemp products, specialized rope or cloth or concrete, plastic, insert thing here, right?
Yeah.
And they can specialize and do specific pieces. And cannabis, specialized cannabis for this or for that, whatever the case may be. But I'll go one step further. Not only will that help out the farmers, there's literally hundreds of thousands of New Yorkers who have chronic pain. And right now they have three options. The one you talked about, which is go to your doctor and stay on an opioid. That's option one. Option two, they can become criminals. And they can smoke marijuana at night and have their kids buy it and hope they don't get arrested.
Yeah.
Or option three, they can suffer. I like option four. If you don't have much money, grow your medicine in your backyard.
Yeah.
You can grow onions in your backyard. Grow your medicine in your backyard.
Like Mother Nature was pretty kind to us, leaving these things lying around just in case. And
absolutely. So let's do it. I'm totally fine with that idea. I'm not about being righteous. Righteous is very low on my priorities. Happy New Yorkers, very high on my priority. Let's make happy New Yorkers. But I'm still not done. If we do all those things, not just that, you allow people who've been imprisoned for drug-related crimes, who have destroyed resumes because they've been in prison for a long time, or they can't get rid of their background. So what can they do? They can now start businesses in this field, right?
Yeah.
One of the reasons why you find Colorado had a homeless problem, one of the reasons is a bunch of people flocked over there thinking, oh, great, I can restart my life now. That's awesome. And they sold everything they had and went to start a new life in Colorado because they couldn't do well in their own state because they had records and that kind of thing. They went to Colorado and realized, oh, it's hard to get into this business. You have to have licensing and background checks and everything. Well, you don't have to have a license or background check to sell onions, do you?
Yeah.
So done. You have a problem, you now have a job or a business. Go off with your bad self and start making some money.
Yeah, I've actually seen criticisms of creating hemp plastic, which is biodegradable to replace all the plastic that everyone's always saying is, you know, destroying the oceans, etc. And one of the main criticisms was we don't have enough hemp production, as if that was the main problem. Like, you can increase production. Production is just how many people are willing to go do it. So that's, if anything, an opportunity for a ton of people to get employed and fix an industry. You know, of course, DuPont and all the friends, they don't want hemp plastic to replace their plastic.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, you've got all that working against you. So one other thing I wanted to talk about is a little more about how you would use digital governance. So would you, one little project I had was something called RepMe. It was sort of a way to create consensus with like constituencies. So to get everyone involved, to crowdsource essentially the creation of legislation, get everyone involved in the actual process of the creation of law rather than the public displays of dissatisfaction and just the for and against.
I have a worry with that. I do. And it's not a technology worry. It's a human worry. What I mean by that is I've had people talk about that and say, see, I'll just know what the people want and then I'll vote that way.
Mm-hmm.
Then why do I require a representative?
Yeah. Well,
right? That's the issue.
I guess now, I would
if
almost...
telling me we don't want representatives, we want direct democracy, that's a different issue. But yeah, that's my worry. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean I'm against it. It doesn't mean we shouldn't do it. It just means I have a worry.
Yeah, I don't know if they would necessarily want it, but I do think it is. I think we've come a long way from a time when you used to call your representative or email him and tell him your thoughts to a point where they don't even really pay attention to what their people want, and they almost pay attention selectively to what a few people on Twitter.
No, I agree. That's how it works now. So that's what I said. I'm not against it. I simply have a worry. Having a concern doesn't mean I don't want to do it. It just means we should be aware of the concern.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's something I thought a lot about as well, trying to figure out, I guess, just ways to get people more involved, more in the substantive process, like you're talking about, where you
more involved
have come...
is everything, my friend. Over 70% of New Yorkers don't even bother voting.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's how bad it is. I agree. To be clear, I wasn't saying that I wouldn't do it. I think it's a wonderful idea. I'm just saying we have to be aware that we may find people who literally aren't doing any job. They're simply looking at what the RepMe says and go, oh, that's what I'm voting? Done. I'm going to go, there's my vote. I'm going to go off to hang out in Puerto Rico now.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Might be for the best in the long run.
My worry is it won't be.
Yeah.
My worry is without a rep going back and forth, and the rep I often use as an example is someone like Thomas Massey, who will sometimes go against his constituency, but he at least explains why and what he thought.
Yeah.
If we have more of that, we have more Masseys, oh my God, rep me everything.
Yeah. And I think that's the key, is making sure they're just held accountable if they do vote against what it seems like the majority of their constituency would want, and being
Absolutely.
Able to provide those. And just by having that, so people are paying attention at all and saying, oh, that's weird, he voted against what 90% of his constituents wanted.
Yes.
Except he got a big donation from the pharmaceutical company last
Bingo.
Term.
and what does that mean? That means now the people have an opportunity to go, you know what? He voted against what we thought was our best interest, but we think he was right anyway and we trust him, so we'll reelect him. Or no, this guy's a jerk taking money from people we don't like him, get rid of him.
Exactly, yeah.
And both are the right answer as long as it's your rep and you're involved and you choose.
Yeah, exactly. And so would you be in favor of more like bulk registration? So people have tried, some people think everyone should be registered to vote. Do you think everyone should be registered? Do you think only people who are really interested should be participating?
Well, here's the problem, right? As I don't want to force.
Yeah.
Right? I don't want to force. Do I want everyone involved? I do. I want everyone involved. I really do. That would be my, that's what I want. The issue is, how do we incentivize people to do so? That's the issue. I want to incentivize people to do it.
Yeah.
And one of it will be being cool and fun.
Yeah.
But there may be something else. There may be some benefit you get for being a registered voter.
People love kudos. Any way you can give it to them.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe there's some way to give them kudos. You know, if you're a registered voter, you know, you get a special tag on your license plate or something. I don't know. I'm making this up.
Yeah.
But the concept of incentivize is what I want. I don't want to do it to where we have to force them. Like, if you don't do it, you pay a fee. Or if you don't do it, you know,
no individual go to jail. Mandate.
Yeah, I would rather not have that.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. So with that, is there anything else you wanted to close with? Some final thoughts on crypto? I guess, what is your experience with crypto thus far? Are you an investor? Have you sort of been around?
I am. I'm a long-term guy. When I saw that Bitcoin was going up, I bought a bunch of it and I just sit on it. And I'm waiting for the next explosion. I hope it happens soon.
Smart man. I'm expecting
I'm assuming there's going to be an explosion. I don't know that to be true. I'm not that much of an investor. So, but my assumption is there will be an explosion. So at one point, whether that's next year or 10 years from now, I don't know. But whenever that explosion happens, I'm going to sell.
Yeah.
So I bought a bunch. I don't even know what Bitcoin is at. Like, I'm not that guy who checks every week or every day. I have no idea. But I didn't buy it very well. I think I bought it at like, it's like around 10K.
Well,
in that area, I think it was something like that because it was on its way up, I think, when I bought it. It was too late. I didn't get it at the top.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. It was on its way back down. That's when I bought it. Back down. So I think it was like 10K when I bought it or something like that. So I don't even know where it is now. But when it explodes, I'll know because people will tell me. And I'll see when it gets big and whatever number it is, I'll sell. So that's my extent of the Bitcoin. I think I own Bitcoin and Litecoin, I think.
Okay. I mean, the good thing is if Bitcoin's doing well, the economy's probably not doing so well. I think it's serving sort of as a counter hedge at this point, even more so than gold. So either things are going well and policies are working or they're not, and you're making money that way, I guess.
Yeah, either way, I thought it was smart to have something.
Yeah,
but my point is, it's not that I am in love with cryptocurrency. I do love it, but I love it because it's new.
Yeah.
It's new and it's different. It's another way of people being able to trade. It's a new way of people being able to provide value to each other. It's exciting, a new way to start new businesses. It's just good, good, good. It provides more transparency. It provides more trust. It includes more people. There's nothing but good all around it.
Yeah.
Which is why I like it.
It's all about decentralization. And I think,
yes.
I hope, you know, there's some companies doing things. One company in particular, just one example real quick, is a simple idea can change the entire world, is they're doing decentralized storage in exchange for engagement for like article views. So if you're on the website of the New York Times, instead of getting paid with a pop-up ad based on impressions, you get paid on engagement because your computer is essentially working for you and using a decentralized storage model to store other people's files. So instead of New York Times getting paid for an eye-catching article headline, they'll get paid for how long someone reads through till the end of their article. So you change the incentive from clicks to reading the whole article to engagement, and I think you can change the entire incentive structure for reporters reporting on all the most important things in the entire world.
Yeah, I know. I love all these ideas completely. I think it's great. Look, let me do a quick wrap up here. If you're in the crypto world, if you're in the blockchain world, and you want an advocate, I'm the guy right now. And I'm the guy right now because it's going to help my state. It's going to help my state. We are on the same page. LarrySharp.com, Sharp with an E, stands for electable. You can head to my Facebook page, Larry Sharp for New York. See what I'm doing. My YouTube page, Larry Sharp for New York. All good stuff. You'll see what I'm talking about. If you think, well, Larry, it sounds good, but you can't win. Absolutely, as I explained earlier, I can win. But even if I don't win, even if you're right and I can't win, if I come in second or third and do well, what happens? these ideas keep getting pushed. People keep putting microphones in my face. And as they put microphones in my face, I push this issue because I want to save my state and eventually the nation.
Well, I'll be voting for you. I hope everyone else does too. So thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate discussion. And thanks you guys for listening. If you have any questions, comments, etc., and if you have some crypto laying around, shoot it over to Larry, because I think we're putting it in good hands. Alrighty. Thanks guys.